accession number 29047, this Len Town End, Reel 2. Now, you went to Cardington then. This is to the Recruit Reception Centre in December 1942.
Yeah.
Now, what happened to you there?
Well, off the train, and the usual thing, you see it on television at regular intervals, which is pretty accurate, these comedy things where they bounce you along and make you feel stupid and all the rest of it.
In what way?
They're just... the whole thing is to knock any cockiness out of you. Well, I know that, that's what my further training in life is, so that you became under discipline, and that was it.
And they did that at Cardington?
Yeah. Well, at Cardington also, they decided what trade you were going to be. That
now
was the
how
first.
Did they decide that?
I'll tell you now, very clearly. We went in this room, thousands of us, because you can imagine what it was like. In 1942, they were lining up to get in. We go in the queue there, and I'd come with all my proficiency. I'd got a proficiency certificate from the ATC as a wireless operator. I walked in, I said, "Wireless operator, please." That queue there, goes down the queue, said, "You're a flight mechanic." "I'd be a wireless operator." "You're a flight mechanic." So I became flight mechanic engines. There was absolutely no choice whatsoever. You were just slotted in there. If they wanted flight mechanics that day, you were a flight mechanic. If they wanted wireless operators, you were a wireless operator.
So there was no assessment of skills or looking
none
at
qualifications? None whatsoever. As I say, I had this ATC certificate, which was for wireless operators, no, at all. In fact, I was very, very pleased that they hadn't discovered I was a cook, because I might have been a cook in the Air Force, and I would have hated that. So, that was it. They kitted us out in the usual way.
Tell me what they kitted you out with. This is the full kitting out.
The full kitting out. And I've seen this, and it has been done on television as a comedy show and that, but it is definitely true. You go in the room, you walk down the flipping table, and they throw this bit at you, that bit, the next bit, and the rest of it. You look like size 8, that's yours, and it goes all down. At the end of the line, if they don't fit, you're swapping them out between each of you until you've got something that fitted.
And what did they actually give you? Do you remember? I mean, there's a lot of it, I think.
Oh, I'll go as far as I can, because I would say they gave you, first and foremost, they gave you shirts, underpants, vests, jacket. No, it wasn't a berry in those days. It was a forage cap, you know, the old tricolour. Irons, you know, knife, fork and spoon. Housewife, it's the old joke, the housewife. Loads of jokes about that. Socks. Boots. Boots, shoes in them days. Shoes. Kit bag. And the whole lot, you're going down there, and I dropped mine. Not the only one that ever dropped it. Walk over it, the bloody sergeant. No, corporal. I went sergeant, then next corporal. Walk over it, walk over it. So I got all mine trampled in the mud, and well, it was, had to sort it out, and into the billet. I had to sort it all out, and from there on, that was just kitting out. We had the homosexual lecture, as I like to call it.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, it's quite funny, that was, because I haven't the faintest idea what homosexual was. None of us had. What's bloody homosexual? But they didn't call it homosexual. We had it's a sergeant. Sergeant Medic came in this. Going, "We don't want any of this. We don't want any of that funny stuff, you see." I haven't the faintest bloody idea what he was talking about. It wasn't until later on. Well, yeah, what's going on? Most of us are saying. Well, there was one or two of the lads probably come from London or somewhere that, and they knew what it was. And that's it. But there was absolutely no... absolutely no argument about it. It was it, but it was, that was the first election. I told you what to do and how to clean your teeth and all the rest of it. And
I mean, did they really? I mean, this cleanliness. That's, you know, did it really go down? How far did they go down with personal cleanliness? You know, training.
In a way, of training, nothing much at all. I'd just make sure you did it. You know, you just come round and inspect you. I mean. You had to have a shave. Me, in my case, in them days, I couldn't bloody shave. I only got bum fluff, but as soon as you get pulled up for not having a shave, and then, of course, in the barbers, while we're at Carnegie, in the barbers, and short back and sides be damned straight off, you know. You know, that's exactly the way it was. all of these comedy films that you see, like Carry On films, it is just like that. It's exactly.
And how? What about your haircut? How did you find yours?
Well, I wasn't too worried about it, but in fact, probably I think there's a bit of a bravado those days. Oh yeah, look at this. Because of course everybody used to wear it a lot longer in them days, but it was straight up. It wasn't a haircut; it was a massacre.
Anything else at Cardiff? Because you're not there long.
It's only there two days at the most. Then straight on the train up to Blackpool for square bashing.
Recruit training centre.
That's it. That's where you learnt square bashing.
Now, what happened when you got there? What were the billets like?
No billets. You went in hotels.
And tell me about that. How comfortable or otherwise were they?
I was in three different ones. I was there for 5 weeks, I think. Yeah, 5 weeks I was there. And they were all adequate, but they weren't home. That was it.
Were the civilians still in them, or was it all army in the hotels?
Almost all of the hotels were all guest housing, that they were all service. In fact, as far as I can remember, civilians weren't allowed in Blackpool. It was a forbidden zone. It was on the sea.
Who would feed you in the billets? Was it
the landladies? Yeah.
What were the landladies like? Because Blackpool landladies.
Well, again, you see, I was fortunate. I've had loads of my mates say that they got some lousy ones, but they were all mums, sort of thing, you know, those poor sides away from home with that, thrown into this lot. And that was it.
So, how did they start your training at Blackpool?
Well, the first thing I'd probably tell you about is another memory that may be used in this sort of thing. Is that one of the first things we did was get inoculated. So it was the very first thing we did, big inoculations and all the rest of it through this. And of course, everybody was knocked out. Or me, along with two others, we were knocked out. And next morning, oh God, no, I called the doctor. We didn't get up and didn't go to work, didn't go to parade. So now mates said, oh, you can't do that, you know, you can't do that. Oh, we're sick. Was on a charge for malingering. They fetched us, put a couple of police fetched us. That was all part of the tufted up, and that was it. The Derby Baths, which is no longer in Blackpool. In fact, I was in Blackpool a few weeks ago. Incidentally, one of the billets I was in, I've got a picture of it again. It's at the back of that. Well, I went with the RAF at a conference this year. The street at the back was one of the streets I was in, and the hotel is still the boarding house is still there.
Now, so how did they start your training then? I mean, this is your recruit trade. This is not your training as anything to do with flight mechanic. This is your training.
No, this is straightforward discipline training, learning how to march and all this sort of thing. And
now, what do you remember of the RAF drill training as compared to...
Well, basically, it was you're all paired off. And we were paired off with a bloke whose name I can't remember, who came from Ashford in Kent. And I was lucky. Some of them are absolute pigs, but this guy, and they're all PTIs, right, and they're all corporals, or most of them were corporals. And they used to form up outside an area where you had to go. You formed up in the for roll call to make sure everybody was there. Then you formed up into these groups, who was about 40 probably in each squad, and marched way out miles. I mean, I think we did about a 3 mile march to get out to where we did our square bashing. I mean, bashing up and down this road, left, right, turn, all this sort of thing. And finally, we had rifles, and we had to use rifles for quite a little while to let us to march, and that was it. Then we used to go in the Derby Baths for a bath. Twice a week, yes, that's almost certainly twice a week we had to go into the Derby Baths, where again all those young lads came to a shocking disclosure. Take all your clothes off in there, get in the pool. Well, what kind of... In the pool, so there's 2,000 flipping totally naked men all in the Derby Baths having a bath.
Now, are these baths, or are these...
The swimming pools, they called it. It's called the Derby Baths, so, and it's not there anymore. There's a hotel where it was.
Could you swim?
No, not in them days. Wasn't long before it could.
Now, what other training we do? What about weapons training? Any of that?
Only drill weapons.
Okay. So just rifle
let's,
for the
let's back off. Yeah, let's back off. Yes, we did have a session on the range. We fired the gun. That's it. And the other thing I just remember, I almost forgot that. You just brought memory back. We fired a grenade. And that's frightened the life out of me. That
throwing a grenade.
No, fired it. We never threw one. If I can't remember, it was a rifle from a discharger on the end of the rifle, because I remember that, and these were live, because we know that when they got there, they went off, and I was frightened to bloody death that one of these was going to just pop out the end and blow up on me. I really was. I was frightened then. I can remember that.
And what about your rifle train out? What
sort of that was with? Just, well, it's the only thing you could do well in the Air Force. I did go to Bisley later on in life, but I was always a good shot.
And what made you a good shot? I mean, was it
no idea? I've no idea. My eyesight's not good. It was not good in those days. I've always worn I've worn glasses ever since I was 14, and my eyesight wasn't good. But
what about breathing, steadiness?
I suppose I just this is it. I suppose I never get the shakes, so I was good.
And you were good right from the start.
Yeah, right from the start. I was always good at it.
So it wasn't the training that made you.
No, I was natural. But
and did you qualify as a marksman on that course, or was it not that sort of course?
No, you didn't qualify for a marksman unless you're in the RAF regiment or something like that. It wasn't necessary.
Did you get the Sten as well?
Yes, the Sten was our Sten. Well,
was it then on basic training? It's a bit early.
Well, again, I cannot remember when, but I can't remember. No, we certainly didn't get the Sten then.
Right, it's my fault. I think
Fair enough. It is a bit, but certainly I used the Sten later. In fact, the Sten was the standard weapon the Air Force had. We didn't have rifles later on.
Come back to
yeah.
Now, anything else on your basic training that you recall?
Ridiculous things. One of my stories I used to.
Yes.
I always one of my swing the lamp things. I always tell you I was trained by Stanley Matthews, footballer. Because one of the things used to go for PT to the Blackpool football ground. And again, it must have been about 3,000 RAF blokes standing there doing the ups and downs and ups and downs. And Stanley Matthews often was the PTR, standing on a dais in the middle. You could hardly see who it was, but everybody said it was Stanley Matthews. So I always say Stanley Matthews was part of my training. Oh yeah, all the PTIs in those days were corporals. Yeah, it was very rare.
Did you know who he was then? Was he as famous in 42?
Yeah.
He's very famous post-war.
Yeah, he was well known. That's why he was at flipping Blackpool. Yeah.
Now, how did you do with your PT? Because you'd been downgraded as being weak.
Yeah, I'm not very good at it.
How did you
improve? But again, you see. Nobody, you just had to do it. It was PT. That was to keep you fit. And there was no grading of it at all. The only grading came at the end when you finished, that you had to march correctly as a team. And one of the things about going to Blackpool as an A, the only thing perk we ever got out of being in the ATC, if you'd been in the ATC, you were only given 4 weeks square bashing, 4 weeks training. If you hadn't been in the ATC, you did 6 weeks. So we got the 4 weeks, but I'd rather have had the 6 weeks, because all the flipping PTIs are going, you're ATC, you've got to be good. They used to put you through hell, that's it. So, but
now, what about in the evening? I mean, Blackpool's not a bad place.
Oh, it's great. It's lovely.
I mean, what would you do in the evening? I mean,
get drunk.
Did you drink then?
No, but I did then. You get what I mean? When I went, my dad used to like a pint. I used to have the odd drink with him. But that's when I really started to drink.
And what would you do? Where would you go? Mainly
Winter Gardens and these places.
To where?
Winter Gardens and these places. Another silly story. First time I ever got drunk was in the Winter Gardens. And I remember quite clearly, I remember to this day, laying on my back, looking up in the air at these stars in the roof. And in I can't remember the name of the room, in one of the rooms in the Winter Gardens, it's got this starlight roof thing. And for years and years and years, I'd remembered this roof, but I hadn't the faintest idea where it was. And about 10 years ago, I went to Blackpool with the Rappe, and it goes in the Winter Gardens, and I sit there and I drink. Look, there's them bloody stars. It's true. Unfortunately, they've took the damn things down this last 2 or 3 years. They've gone.
So you took to drink. You enjoyed it.
Oh, well, you couldn't not. It's like smoking. You'd be ostracised if you didn't go smoke. You were a funny guy if you didn't smoke and drink.
So you smoked as well?
Yeah, but I stopped smoking after a very short while. And
did you take that up as well when you arrived in Blackpool?
Smoking, yeah.
And there was pressure on you to smoke then, just from the lads?
Yeah, there's no argument about that. If you weren't one of the lads if you didn't go. Where would you go? All the lads went out for a drink. What were you going to do? Sit on your own in the billet? Walk around on your own in the streets? No, you're away from home. First time you've been away. And that was it. Apart from which, didn't mind. It was, you know, get with the lads.
Did you enjoy smoking?
I was 18 years old, mate.
Did you enjoy smoking?
No, I never did enjoy smoking, which is why I packed it up as soon as I came and realised it was stupid to carry on with it. No, I never got hooked on smoking.
Now, how did you get on with the instructors generally? I mean, what did you think of them? I mean, were they good lads or were they bullies or what were they?
I was always, in all my life, I was always extremely lucky. Every one of them was a fair disciplinarian. But I'd known some of them that were absolute total pigs. But fortunately, I wasn't caught with them. And I would suggest that possibly, in the main, only a few of them were bullies and the rest of them were just ordinary blokes that were doing the job they should be doing, and that was it. They had to be disciplined.
Was there a lot of shouting and swearing?
Not much swearing. Swearing is not all this talk about swearing. Very little swearing. Very little. It's swearing. I mean, I still cringe when I do swear a little bit myself now, but not the way that I can't stand television now, the swearing that's on it.
Now, what about the other lads, the other recruits? How did you get on with them?
Well, all together. I mean, all in at the same time, all together. You obviously had different times where you fell out with them, but nothing serious. It was a wartime experience, and you had to get on with each other.
Bullying or friction within your group?
Not really, no, no.
Were they all similar sort of lads to yourself? Oh,
exactly,
same background?
Exactly the same, yeah, all the same. I mean, you obviously had one or two differences in that, but very rarely, all pretty much the same.
Now, you were only there, as you said, for, 4 weeks? Instead of six, or was it 6 instead of 8?
Well, in actual, it was about 5 weeks, but that was because there's a little bit at each end, but I did 4 weeks training.
And what happened then? That takes us into January 43, and what was your next post?
Next one, I went to 51 Squadron in Yorkshire.
Now, is that an actual unit posting then, or is that where you're going to do your training?
No. When, at the end of, they were pouring all of these people out and square bashing, and there weren't enough places to run all the courses. So instead of waiting, they shot you out to airfields all over the country. I know it was a bomber command airfield, you see, and gave you a bit of a look. You went there as what they called aircraft assistant or something like that. They called you for a while because you weren't trained as a flight mechanic. You were now past your basic training, so you went as an aircraft assistant, which meant you were the bloody dog's body. On Halifax, as I was, 51 Squadron. So I learnt what the war was all about, where it became not so glamorous.
Now, tell me about that. I mean, what was your first impressions on joining the unit?
I got off the train at a place called Heck, which is still there, I think. I don't know where the train is, right? So a lorry, there's a bill, about a dozen of us, probably more, I don't know. We all came from Blackpool, going to this place. And we got off, and a lorry drew up, a three-tonner drew up. And we thought, oh, great, have a lift here. See, no, put your kit bags on here. The camp's 3 miles up the road. Get going. So we had to walk up to the camp. And as we were walking up.
And that was
up,
at Snaith?
Snaith. Well, it was called RAF Snaith. Yeah, it was called RAF Snaith. But it was, the village was called Heck. It was only just a little tiny village. As I say, as we walked up the road over the sands, all these Halifaxes there, we were quite excited about these. And one of them suddenly bloody blew up in front of us. That was my introduction.
What happened? Can you just describe what happened?
I can only suggest what happened, because I don't, at that particular instance, I didn't know. I'm not going to know that. But they dropped the bombs, but they were bombing up, and they dropped one, which was not supposed to happen, but it did. I know it happened a couple of times, and until they sorted it. But that was it.
Were you required to go and help? Or
not at that point, because I just went up the guard room. And
that make you think of it?
Yes. As I said, it's where I grew up at Snaith or 151 Squadron. I went up there in, these Nissen huts, you know, corrugated iron Nissen huts.
What were they like to live in?
Awful.
Why?
Our one in particular was that the river ran through it. When it rained, it ran straight down the middle of our estate. And we're convinced that they built the bloody thing over a river course or a brook course. They had beautiful stoves in there. This is any old RAF bloke will tell you about these little pot-bellied stoves that when you got them hot, they glowed and they were gorgeous. But you never had enough fuel to keep them hot. And poor old farmers for miles around hadn't got any wood left in their woodlands. We nicked it all the fences, everything. That was it. It was just cold, it was wet, and it was damp. You slept with all your clothes on and your greatcoat and your blankets over the top of that. That was it.
Now, what was the food like? We haven't mentioned food before, but what was it?
Again, at Snaith, the food was all right.
Now, what's all right? What did you get?
I can't tell you. I can't remember. I wouldn't remember.
What was it? What you were used to? The same sort of
No, it was a lower grade, but it's... I was a young lad. I ate any bloody thing.
So it was okay?
It was all right.
It was
no, it's never enough for a growing lad. never had enough food in the Air Force until I got married. Well, that's not strictly true. it was adequate. There's no problems with it. No real problems there. There were a couple of camps later on that had some bad food, but that's because the cooks were nicking it, but that's beside the point. It was adequate for it. We knew what it was, and that was it. The billets were the worst. Definitely the billets were the worst.
Now, so what were you doing? What was a typical day's duties like as a... Well, you're an aircraft assistant, aren't you?
Yeah. So I worked on Halifaxes. Anything that needed cleaning, I cleaned it. They taught me how to change the oil on the Halifaxes.
When you say cleaning, you mean cleaning?
Cleaning, I mean literally. Well, because I was an engine guy, so I used to clean the engines. And aircraft engines leak oil everywhere. It was just a case of cleaning. And contrary to what everybody says in the books, we used to clean it with petrol. Just use petrol. It's great stuff to clean it with. I'm having these detergents in them days.
And what, rags or?
Rags, yeah. Rags.
So you just clean the engine?
Yeah.
And change the oil?
And one of the jobs I got doing was changing the oil.
Now, would that mean taking out the... Was it changing or was it topping up?
I worked on in the... What's it called? Repair and inspection, aren't I? Maintenance, anyway. I worked on third line maintenance. I didn't, at Snaith, I didn't work out on the lines that were sending the aircraft off. I worked in maintenance. And this is
literally when something had gone wrong.
Well, and inspections and this sort of thing, and modifications. When the aircraft came in, it probably had to have an oil change. Well, there's four engines on a Halifax, and that was my job. What you do is a cock there, you put the oil in the thing in a barrel, and open the cop and let the oil go, and then fill it up carrying cans of oil up to the top. I was young and very fit in them days.
That'd be fresh oil.
Yes. Yeah.
And what would you do with the old oil?
Put it in these barrels and roll it away to a dump and somebody else had to dispose of. I don't know what they did with it. Probably took it away and recycled it. I don't really know. All I know, it's one of my famous ones again. I learned the hard way. You learn ever so many things in the Air Force the hard way. Yeah, same job. Well, you see, you got these barrels, you put the thing in the top, open the cop, let it go. I went for a nappy break, and I came back, all the oil was on the floor. What I hadn't realised, I'd started out with a full barrel, so I dumped all the bloody oil on the floor.
Now, would you have to clean that up?
Yes! You made it, you clean it. Yeah.
How would you clean that much oil up? I mean,
with difficulty. I just, you know, get stuck into it. That's it.
So you're cleaning engine. You're in the maintenance sector, so that you're not on the ground crew, so dealing with the
no,
the
I didn't, when they came in overnight. Not as a, occasionally I had to do it. This is where I ran into problems.
I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
You were on where the aircraft were coming up for their regular service or inspections, or if something was wrong and then they'd come into you.
Yeah,
and you were the third line.
Yeah.
Now, so you're changing engine and changing oil. What else are you doing?
Really, that's about all. There's enough to do. I mean, there's plenty of other things. There was, you know, you, obviously they let you do, I'll tell you, to change spark plugs and things like that. But I wasn't trained, so I wasn't allowed to do too much in the way of life at all.
Now, what happened when you went onto the ground crew? So you said you had problems.
Right, well, the other thing was, you see, it's 24 hours in every day, and every airman works 24 hours. So at night you went on guard. At night you had to marshal the aircraft in or out. That was, you know, you've seen them all doing it.
Tell me about the guard duties.
Well, guard duty, you used to have, and these again were total bloody waste of time, but that's beside the point. It was, you had to have guards, so you went on guard. You used to go in at 6 o'clock at night or whatever time it was. They'd give you a rifle and a few rounds, and you used to guard. You just guarded the airfield all night. That was it. You took watches and shifts and all the way around the airfield over there.
Anything ever happened?
No, not a thing. Never was. Except we used to nip down a farmhouse down the back, and you know, they used to give us toast and things like this. Oh, I know all these tricks.
Now, marching the aircraft, can you explain exactly what that is? Because I didn't know what you meant there.
Right, now then. When an aircraft has got to go out to the runway, it starts from where it's at a dispersal base somewhere. Right, or so you've got to get it out there. Now the pilot has got a very, very poor view on the ground. He ain't got much of a view in the air, so he relies on you, on somebody to bring him out and guide him, so that he knows the wheels are not going off the edge into the mud and the rest of it. So this is it. You're marshalling them in. You use your hands in this way. Nowadays they have lights and bats. In those days we didn't. And you know you do this to.
Signaling
to one round, yeah, and straight ahead, and this is it. It's just, I mean, just straightforward. Everybody was taught that. That was you had to do that. That was part and part of it. That was it.
Now, what about when you got sent to the ground? You said that sometimes you had to get sent.
The worst thing about it, you see, is being R&I. We used to get all the sticky jobs, so. Some of these Halifax used to get shot up. And when you shoot a Halifax up, you shoot the buds up inside it, and there's bits of them all over the place. And that was my first job. You're just taking the bits out and cleaning up.
It's an awful thing to ask, but can you tell us a bit about it? I mean, if you can't, that's fine.
Well,
I know you can't really.
All you know is it's like meat in the butchers. That's about the best way I can put it. You know that somebody's dead. You know it's very obviously human bits there, and that's it. But it's just a case of pulling them out, putting them in a bag, and slinging them on the blood wagon, and then cleaning the blood up out of the aircraft. The mess.
How did, I mean, you were at what were you, 18?
Yeah.
How did you react?
They reacted very badly.
It upset you.
And then you got used to it. It's like everything. I've not been in the trenches, but I can quite imagine in the trenches it takes very little time to get totally immune to the fact the bloke next to you has had his head shot off. Seen it before.
I mean, did you have to do this often, this clearing bodies?
Regular. It was a regular trip. There was never a trip, a bomber trip, when every night the weather was good, and there was never a trip come back without there wasn't one or two. Even if they came back in one without any damage, there's always an air gunner shot up. Or if somebody's got hit with a piece of shrapnel.
So the first few times, you found it a pain?
Terrible, I did. I really did upset me.
Did it make you sick, or just mentally?
Mentally, I don't think I was physically sick ever. Just one of those funny things about
me. Did it dwell on your mind in those first few days or weeks?
I can't really think that. I don't really know.
But you did come out of it eventually.
Oh, yeah, you get used to it. It's true.
So were you able to be completely neutral with it?
Yeah, you have to. That was it. See, when the other terrible thing at 50.